Had all his earthly belongings on his back. His hair was bleached blonde. He had on makeup, and he told us he was a dope fiend. We didn't know what to do about the guy. I got together with some of the older members, and we talked to the man and about him. What could we do? When no satisfactory group conscience decision was forthcoming, Barry did what many another AA would have done. He called Bill, to whom he described the prospective member. After a silence, Bill asked Barry to run over the list again. Barry did so. "Now," said Bill, "did you say he was a drunk?" "Oh, yes," Barry replied. "There's no question about that. He's certainly a drunk." "Well, I think that's all we can ask," said Bill. The prospect was invited to attend meetings, and although he soon disappeared, his presence created a precedent for the third tradition. Says Tradition 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. Or, as Bill paraphrased it with an old saying, "Shoemaker, stick to thy last," from Pass It On, pages 317 and 318.
Thank you. Now I have to find my spot. I'm still Rick Lee, and I'm from Area 8, San Diego. Yes, I was chair of H&I last 2 years, and now I'm a DCM again. Okay. Introduces the presenters. Our presenters for this panel are Nick F., Adriana G., Brian P., Manisha G, and Colin H. Our timer for this panel is Bert M.
Bart.
Okay. Okay, timer reads.
Hello. Hi, good morning. Aloha, my name is Bart. I am from District or Area 03. My home group is The Price is Right in Tempe, Arizona. Come on down. Love you more. For this session, each of the presenters will give an 8-minute presentation. The green light comes on immediately after the presenter introduces themselves. The yellow caution light comes on after 7 minutes. And the red light ends the presentation. If the red light turns on, we will thank the speaker with a warm and loving applause. If the presentation is being interpreted, the time allowed will be doubled to 16 minutes with a yellow light at 14 minutes. Sharing from the floor microphones will be timed at 2 minutes. The yellow light comes on at 90 seconds and the red light at 2 minutes. Followed by another loving applause. If the speaker is being interpreted, the time allowed will be doubled to 4 minutes, with the yellow light coming on at 3 minutes. Thanks.
Thank you. All right. So, our first speaker is Nick F. All right.
Okay. First up on Saturday morning, I don't know if I need to put the program's chair in the first column or my gratitude list. My sobriety date is 9/30/02, and my home group is Tuesday Night Lake Grove, a hybrid meeting in Portland, Oregon. I currently serve as the chair of Oregon Area 58. Oh yeah, my name is Nick, and I'm an alcoholic. I got sober at 18 years old, which means I've been coming to AA meetings for nearly a quarter of a century. Long enough to watch the fellowship change in ways that would have seemed like science fiction to the people who wrote our big book. We went from printed directories and rotary phones to websites and apps, from coffee cans and dollar bills to Venmo, from the meeting is at 8 o'clock sharp to you're on mute. You're still on mute. I'm so sorry, but you're still on mute. And through it all, one question has quietly nagged this fellowship, our fellowship, whispered more than spoken, debated more than decided, which is online AA really AA? And I want to answer that today, and my answer is yes. Not sort of, not it depends on the meeting, yes. One fellowship, full stop. Yeah. But I do need to be honest with you, because I didn't always feel that way. When my home group went virtual in March of 2020, like many did with the pandemic, I grieved it. I'm not being dramatic. I genuinely grieved the folding chairs, the coffee, the guy who always took the last donut. God, I hated that guy. The hugs. When I looked at a screen full of little rectangles instead of a room full of people, something in me said, like, this just isn't quite right. I worried that the screen let people hide, that someone could look like they were working a program without actually doing the work, that we were delivering the message but losing the hand of AA. And I suspect I'm not the only one in this room who felt that way. But here's what actually happened when we went viral, or viral virtual, maybe we'll go viral. I hope not. I want to tell you about two people who changed how I see this. The first person, I'm just going to call Belle to keep their anonymity, but before the pandemic, she was out there suffering. When the world shut down and meetings moved online, she found us. Not a meeting down the street, us. Our specific home group in our specific Zoom room. She heard the message. She got a sponsor who lived thousands of miles away. She got involved in service, and she recovered. I don't know if she would have walked through a physical door, but she walked through ours. And she wasn't alone. Because our meeting was online, we weren't limited by geography anymore. We started connecting with members and groups in California, Hawaii, and New Jersey. People who would have never sat in our room were suddenly sitting in our meeting. And the fellowship got bigger, not smaller. Now, we knew from experience that one of the hardest things about virtual meetings was the thing that we had lost, the meeting before and after the meeting, the parking lot conversations, the coffee, the just hanging around. And so we did something about it. We started hosting game nights, trivia, Among Us, reasons to be together that weren't just a meeting, because we knew that's where a lot of recovery happens. Was it the same as an old firehouse on Tuesday night? Like, no. But was it AA? Like, absolutely. Our literature doesn't leave much room for argument here. Tradition 3 says the only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. Not a desire to drive to an old church basement. Not a desire to sit in a folding chair. A desire to stop drinking. Belle had that desire in full. And the only question was whether the hand of AA was ready to meet her where she was. Now, the second person I want to tell you is me, about me. After our home group went hybrid, I continued to attend virtually. I told myself it was practical. I could be home for my kids. I could help my wife. I could be more rested for work the next day. And all of that was true, but I was also comfortable, a little too comfortable. The screen was easier than the room. But AA is not a program of convenience. It's a program of action. This went on for about 2 years. My sponsor, being the kind of sponsor who asks inconvenient questions, eventually started poking at me. When's the last time you were actually in there, like actually in the room? I didn't have a great answer. So in October, I drove to the meeting. I walked through the door, and that night, that specific night, because I was physically present and not a rectangle on a screen, I was able to carry the message outside the meeting. Someone was there who needed help in a way that a camera and a microphone couldn't have reached. They needed a person in the room, sitting next to them. That person is sober today, working the steps and on the path. I don't know what would have happened if I stayed home, but I'm just really glad that I didn't. This is why I don't think online and in person is competing. They serve the same purpose, and they reach different people in different moments. Sometimes the same people need both. At different times in their recovery. I know because I'm someone whose sobriety has needed both. I want to close by talking about something a little closer to the service structure because I think this is where our actions have to match our words. In Oregon Area 58, we have District 33. It is a fully virtual district. No geographic boundaries, no buildings, just alcoholics gathering online, doing the work, group inventories, service commitments, carrying the message. And it raises a fair question. Why should an area built around geography include a district with no geography at all? Our service structure was never designed to exclude online groups. It was designed before they existed. The forms, the districts, the boundaries, all of it was built around addresses. That's not a flaw. That's just the reality of the structure built for a world that has since changed. But a group whose members span three states and two countries shouldn't have to pretend that they have a zip code to have a seat at the table. Integrating online groups into the structure is going to take real effort, and that effort has to come from all of us. Tradition 3 doesn't say a group has to have a physical address. It says that two or three alcoholics gathering for sobriety can call themselves an AA group. If we believe that, and I think we have to, then the service structure needs to reflect it. Online members are not guests in our fellowship. They are not temporary accommodations we made during a crisis and are now hoping they might quietly go away. They are members, full members, and the groups and districts they form deserve the same recognition, the same voice, and the same support that we extend to every other group and district in this room. No second-class citizens, not in recovery and not in service. The founders of this program wrote in A Vision for You, in 1939, when crossing the country meant days on a train, "Someday we hope that every alcoholic who journeys will find a fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous at his destination." They were imagining trains. We have Zoom. Technology has changed, but the promise didn't. The doors look different. The room is the same. My name is Nick, and I'm an alcoholic. Thank you for letting me be a service.
Thank you, Nick. Thank you. Oh, I just stay here. Oh, I forgot to mention my sobriety date, December 30th, 1977, and I was a GSR and a DCM in the early 80s. Cell phones, computers, yeah. 2020 was a different time. All right, and our next speaker is Andriana G. Young people.
Good morning, Pacific Region of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Adriana, and I'm an alcoholic. I currently... I currently serve as area treasurer for Panel 75, Hawaii, Area 17. Cool. And being up here is much easier than being in front of my area presenting my treasurer's report. If you know, you know. It's an honor and a privilege to be up here this morning speaking on the topic, young people in AA. Are we making room at the table? When I look around my home group, which is labeled a young people's meeting, Bad Brains, we meet on Wednesday, I don't actually see many young people. When I look around at area assemblies and committee meetings, I don't see them there either. I came into AA when I was younger. I was in my mid-20s. My first home group was a 6:30 a.m. meeting, a spiritual awakening. It was full of long-timers and lots of elder members. Young people were not represented in this group. I didn't see myself in these people. I didn't hear my story in them, but I felt the language of the heart, and I was desperate. I was looking for relief, and I found it in that room, and I found it in the literature. So I stayed. I was told by these elder members to get into service, come to group conscience. It's on the first Saturday of every month after the meeting. They did not say it was 2 hours. They did not mention that. But I went, and I was there, and you know, I took a service position, coffee maker at 6:30 a.m. on Monday morning. It was very challenging. At 10 months sober, I was elected as alternate GSR of this group, of this long-timer group. And 1 month into my commitment, I became the active GSR, as we so commonly do. My first responsibility as active GSR, attend PRASA. It was being held in Irvine, California. Shout out to Area 9. Yep. My first PRASA experience, it was really special. No one asked me if I wanted to do it. No one said, do you want to be GSR? Like, no one said, are you ready to be a GSR? And then no one said, you need to go through the traditions first in order to be the GSR. There was none of that. Looking back at my experience, I realized I was very much shoved to the table. A chair was pulled out for me, and someone said, sit here. There was room for me at that table. There was room for me at that meeting, and there was room for me at General Service. When I look around the rooms today, at the different tables that I sit at, you know, my home group, not very many young people, the assemblies, the committee meetings, not very many young people at those tables. So I find myself asking different questions. Do young people know where to find AA? Do they know that a solution exists for them? How can they find the table of AA if they don't know where to go? Do young members who are in AA know where to find General Service? Are we inviting them to the General Service table? A few months ago, a 16-year-old walked into my home group. She was brought by her mom. Her mom had some familiarity with Alcoholics Anonymous. This 16-year-old didn't hear about AA from a school counselor. She didn't hear about AA from a peer. It wasn't standing committee work that brought her to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. It was a parent who knew. At Hickey Paw last year, 2025, the Hawaiian Island Conference of Young People in AA, I saw some younger people, but I didn't see young people. The host committee was made up of mostly people in their 30s, some in their 40s, a few in their 20s, but certainly none in their teens. To put it plainly and simply, there is a gap. And I see that gap. I see it everywhere. It's literally happening right now in real time, just outside of those doors, right outside. There is a table. It is labeled Hickey Paw. There is so much room at that table. There's so much room. Do you know why? Because no one is sitting there. There's no one sitting there. Nobody. I had to go through multiple people to find out who is the point of contact for this table. The people I asked, they didn't seem to know. Short answer, there is no contact for that table. It's just a perfect example of what we're talking about right now. Is there room at the table? There's a whole table out there with lots of room. It is ready. It is waiting for the young people, you know? But do our young people know where to find it? Better yet, have they been invited? So why is this happening? Why do we have such a gap? Is it because we don't currently have a standing committee that serves and cooperates with the young community? Is it because public information isn't reaching young people? Is it because cooperation with the professional community doesn't always include schools? Or is it because we've gotten really good at serving some populations and have unintentionally left others out? I'm not here to offer any solutions or answer these questions. I'm just here to bring awareness, and I think the questions are worth asking. They were worth asking me. I think it's worth asking you guys. Maybe you can ask your areas, my area, I don't know. So the final question, which is my topic, young people in AA, are we making room at the table? The answer is yes. There's always room at the table in Alcoholics Anonymous for anyone, anywhere. But making room at the table isn't just about having an empty chair. It's about making sure people know that they're invited and showing them where to sit. Thank you for letting me be of service.
Good job. Thank you.
Thank you. Uh-oh. Now I'm in trouble. Akipa, 83, San Diego, program chair. Thanks, Paul. Yeah, moving right along. Oh, yeah, now where are we? I don't know.
I need an adult.
Oh, look at that. Okay. Presenter three, Brian.
Thank you. Aloha! Hello, family. My name is Brian P., and I'm a grateful alcoholic. My home group is the Bridge to Hope International Chinese and English AA Group, and I serve as the chairperson for Area 5 Southern California. So good to have you guys with me. Thank you so much. I also serve as an appointed committee member for the Trustees Literature Committee with the assignment of leading a working group to assist in the development of the new pamphlet, AA for the Asian and Asian American Alcoholic. All right. I want to express my sincere gratitude to Area 17 and to the entire PRASA committee for inviting me to speak on the topic, AA and the Asian / Pacific Communities Breaking Through Stigma and Silence. I think this topic is attempting to address the fact that Asians and Pacific Islanders are greatly underrepresented in our fellowship. According to the latest Canadian and U.S. censuses, we make up roughly 19% of the Canadian population and 7% of the U.S. population, yet our latest AA membership survey showed that Asian and Pacific Islanders together only accounted for 1.5% of AA members in the U.S. and Canada. I think this topic also suggests that there might be some cultural factors at play, such as a higher level of stigma associated with alcoholism. This increased stigma might then lead to more silence about alcoholism and thus lead to fewer of us reaching the rooms of AA. One aspect of this topic I want to address is how broad the term Asian / Pacific communities is in terms of the extremely large and diverse group of people it is meant to represent. It includes over 60 countries, from South Korea to Bangladesh to the Solomon Islands and all around. Let's consider the various histories of all these countries for a moment. Many were colonized or occupied by other imperialistic countries from within the region and from abroad. There have been many conflicts between countries, civil wars, different regimes and systems of government. Altogether, many different circumstances in which Asians and Pacific Islanders have lived. All of these factors have shaped each culture and the people within them in many different ways. There are also the different religious beliefs which are prevalent in different parts of Asia and the Pacific, including Buddhism, Hinduism, Islam, and Christianity. I can tell you that to my parents, being Christian and acting accordingly is much more important to them than being Chinese. And when we talk about immigrants from these places, there are huge differences in the circumstances of their migrations. Were they brought here exploitatively for labor in the days of railroads and sugarcane plantations? Were they here when extremely racist laws and bans were in place? Did they come later when immigration was open only to skilled professionals? Or were they wealthy individuals that were allowed more recently to come here by making investments? Or did they come here as refugees during wars and conflicts abroad? Or are they native Hawaiians and indigenous to the U.S., never having immigrated at all? There are also huge differences between first-generation or foreign-born immigrants and their descendants, who are second, third, and fourth generation or more. There are so many other factors, too, that go into what each Asian or Pacific Islander is like and shape our values, beliefs, and personalities. There are the places where we currently reside, or things like gender, age, or sexuality, lived experiences like being in the military or living with a disability, and so many other factors. I bring all this up because there is so much more that makes us individuals in this group rather than monolithic. To be reductive and generalize issues across a group of people with such vast differences would be a mistake. Fortunately, we don't do this in AA. Instead, we approach each person as an individual, allow for all our differences, and focus on the commonalities we have as alcoholics. When we tell our AA stories, when we tell our AA stories in order to carry the message, we don't try to take on big issues or adjust our story for broad appeal. We just tell the truth about ourselves and allow our story, thank you so much, allow our story to reach whoever it reach whoever it reaches. It's the collective power of all of us each sharing our own stories that allows AA to reach anyone, anywhere. So if we want to help people in Asian and Pacific communities break through any barriers, such as stigma and silence, we just need to carry the message, each of us making the effort to reach out to them, learn who they are as individuals, and give them access to ourselves, our truths, and our love. One way we are doing this as a fellowship that I'm very excited about is by developing a new pamphlet for Asian alcoholics. We are in the process of collecting stories for this pamphlet, and I hope we will produce a pamphlet that reflects our cultural richness and diversity, yet still shows that all alcoholics are the same somewhere deep inside. I hope that when it's finished, it can help suffering Asian alcoholics find us and see that they belong here. I hope that it can help all of us be more conscious of our Asian fellows, and that it can help sponsors and friends of AA too. The deadline for story submissions is March 31st. Another thing we need to do if we want to help Asian and Pacific Islander alcoholics is to recognize that many have experienced racism, and some have family backgrounds that involve ancestors receiving incredibly cruel treatment and being subjected to harsh and unfair policies. People have told me stories about racism they've experienced in the rooms of AA, and I've even experienced some instances myself. Some AA members have denied these stories, saying there's no racism in AA, we're always inclusive and never exclusive, or statements to that effect. I love AA. I love our fellowship. Everything I've experienced here has led me to trust our intention to help each other and those around us to be sincere and in good faith. It's not about intention, though. It's about effect and what our actions can trigger. This is a very tricky subject, and it's another place where each affected person needs to be considered individually. There are huge differences in what we have experienced or the coping mechanisms we've developed consciously or unconsciously as a reaction to these experiences. Some of us are very wary. Some are angry with deep-rooted resentments. Some don't feel affected at all and make self-deprecating jokes based on their own race and associated stereotypes and tropes. All of this is not unique to Asians and Pacific Islanders, by the way. Any groups of people who have experienced discrimination, who have been subjected to hate, who have been deeply misunderstood, and who might carry traumas from this, sometimes intergenerationally, deal with these issues. There's no secret or trick to navigating what might seem to be a minefield. My advice is to proceed without fear, letting love in your heart lead. If you find yourself being told that you've offended, or if you sense that something might have happened, check in with the person and ask if they're okay. Be kind and generous. Apologize if you need to. Be patient and open to hearing about their experience. Be okay if they want to leave or if they don't want to explain themselves to you. Be humble and learn. Be loving and be kind and okay with yourself as well. The worst thing we can do is be scared and to not engage in interactions with people who need our help. I want to close by telling you an amazing story about a young man named Ding Bao who came to my home group. A few years ago, he started attending our meetings and he could only speak and understand Chinese. He was very enthusiastic from the start. He was often seen smiling at our meetings, and he volunteered to do readings, and he took commitments. Several months later, he finally told us his story. He was struggling with a drinking problem and was ordered to attend AA meetings by the courts. He started attending some meetings in Seattle, but could not understand what people were saying. He could see that something good was happening there, though. At one of the meetings, a long-timer approached him and used a translation app to communicate with him. Ding Bao said this member would sit with him at meetings and translate AA sayings and phrases for him. These warm and kind acts were enough to help him get and stay sober. One day, others in the group found out about our meeting, which was conducted in Mandarin and English, and shared the information with him. When he finally found us, he was overjoyed. You don't need to be Asian or Pacific Islander to carry the message to an Asian or Pacific Islander alcoholic. Remember, it's our alcoholism and our solution that binds us. If you encounter someone you have a communication barrier with, know that just the attempt to reach out is an act of love and service that can count for something. Know that AA meetings in other languages from across the world are now available online, and recovery meetings exclusive to Black, Indigenous, and people of color are available too for those who need them, sometimes as a stepping stone to get to AA. Mahalo again to Prasa for the opportunity to speak on this topic, and thank you all for your loving attention.
Quick little announcement for the radios, 96.5. Okay, now I have to find number four. Is that what we're doing? Yes.
Tell real quick in Spanish.
96.5 los radios al español.
And? Well, there she is.
I don't know. I think I'm going to do this as well. Should I? I think it's a woman thing, maybe. You know. Okay. Anyway, yes, I wasn't expecting so many people at 8 a.m., but here we are. Okay, anyway, the topic is gender and identity in AA. Are all members finding a home? My name is Manisha, and I'm an alcoholic. Currently, I serve as an appointed committee member on the Trustees Literature Committee, and I'm grateful to Bob and the PRASA committee for the opportunity to present on this morning panel. When I first walked into AA, I walked in with that feeling many of us know. Is there a seat for me here? Do I feel at home? I have always felt different. And yes, I am indeed different, look at me. But what really fueled my alcoholism wasn't difference. It was a profound sense of separation. And even after I got sober, I was afraid to bring all of myself to the rooms. Regarding the topic, gender and identity, are all members finding a home? I'm not hearing this as a debate or something that has a yes or no answer. I'm hearing this as an AA inventory question. The AA group pamphlet talks about a home group becoming an extended family, and where, once isolated by our drinking, we find a solid continuing support system. So the question becomes, are we truly creating that kind of a spiritual container for everyone? Do our differences become the vital threads that weave a greater, more united whole, or do they become reasons to separate ourselves and exclude others? We are people who would normally not mix, especially not at 8 a.m. yet, here we are, a fellowship of people and a fellowship of the spirit. But where does this promise get tested for gender-diverse people? By gender diverse, I mean transgender, non-binary, gender queer, two-spirit, mahu. It's a wide spectrum of all gender expressions. In service, we talk about reaching remote communities. But sometimes a community is remote because the barriers are not physical, but emotional or social. Are we unintentionally making our message even more remote for those who already feel AA might not be there for them? Unity does not require conformity. It requires a shared commitment to our common welfare. It tells us that there is no us in AA, because if there is an us, there must be a them. There is no them or us in AA. There is only we. But where does this promise of we get tested? Where does a member's gender identity stop being an outside issue and become a reality they experience very much inside AA? Usually, it is the small everyday moments that make a difference. It is assumptions in how we greet people. It is an exclusive men and women tone from the podium. It's what happens when somebody is misgendered. It's also about accessibility and bathrooms. Perhaps some of the direct experiences of our gender diverse members can shed some light on this. In the August 2023 Grapevine, a member writes, this is a member from the community, "The first couple of years in AA were difficult. Even in Brooklyn AA, I was chased out of bathrooms and shunned at some meetings. People didn't talk to me." Some members have shared that they couldn't get people to say their real name and pronouns, and they had to change themselves to fit in to AA. One member shared that their men's group, by conscience, decided that trans men, transgender men, could attend their meeting only if they could pass as male. Sometimes sponsorship customs can be confusing to someone who is outside the binary. One member shared, "I heard men stick with men and women with women. I felt I had to lie for the fear they wouldn't sponsor me. Or if I shared my truth, they would think I'm coming on to them." And sometimes we tell newcomers, "Don't make any major life changes in your first year." Funny, considering putting down a drink is the biggest change most of us made in our first year, hopefully. But many of us drank to escape the pain of living a lie. Sober, we have no choice but to live authentically. For a newcomer, embracing their true gender identity isn't a major life change to avoid. It may be the life-saving honesty this program demands. But none of this is insurmountable. For a newcomer who already feels different, these moments can decide whether they come back. So what can we do to restore trust and hope so more people can find a home in AA? For me, a big part of this was watching how trusted servants speak, listen, and make room when discussing hard topics. I'm going to share a little bit about my story. At 4 years sober, I was active in district service, showing up to assemblies like this. Yet my soul was hurting because I was hiding and not living in my true gender. And then, sitting in those assemblies, I began to hear discussions about the proposed pamphlet for the transgender alcoholic. For over 3 years, I sat and watched trusted servants walk up to the microphone. I witnessed this topic handled with humility. No heat, no othering, just spiritual purpose. I watched people practice grace and patience around something that was deeply and secretly personal to me. You weren't debating. You were building a spiritual container. It was the safety of that container that finally gave me the courage to come to terms with my own gender identity and begin living my life authentically. You gave me belonging through language, process, and a tone that said, "You have a place here. You are part of the we." So you never know who is listening to your area discussions, waiting to see if it is safe to be themselves. We don't need everyone to understand everything, but we need everyone to help make room. If someone is misgendered, it does not require a massive debate. We can correct each other lovingly without shaming. Good intentions can sometimes mean clumsy language, but we must choose belonging over misunderstanding. This is also why my current service assignment feels tied to this topic. As chair of the working group for the development of the transgender pamphlet, we have been holding writing workshops to encourage gender-diverse members to submit stories, and I all encourage you to please, in your areas, to encourage people who are gender-diverse to submit their stories by March 31st. But I want to share one thing that one member said in one of our workshops that really stayed with me. The participant said, "I am so used to rejection that it would be hard to be vulnerable in my story and have it be rejected by AA for publication." That hit me because it was not really about writing. It was about belonging. It was the fear that even AA might not be safe enough to hold them and hold the truth. It was the fear that they cannot bring all of themselves to AA. So that brings us right to our discussion. Initial question, are we creating a spiritual container that is big enough where people bring all of themselves to the room? In the realm of our spirit, broader, is our realm of spirit broad and roomy to include all genders? AA is not perfect, but can we all find wholesomeness in our shared brokenness? Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, I'm still Rick, and while I'm scrolling to find, our next speaker. Don't forget the San Diego Roundup's coming up next month. Oh, sorry. Heather told me to say that. Whoa. Aloha.
Aloha.
Here in Hawaii, that means a lot of happy alcoholics. I want to thank Deborah and Sean, our delegate and alternate delegate. Bob and Gina, our program chair and co-chair, the entire PRASA committee. And I want you to really know who's running this show. There's three gals in the room. You never know it. It's Francesca, Aaron, and T, and they keep this thing running smooth. My name's Colin, I'm alcoholic. I serve as District 11 treasurer on the island of Maui here in Area 17. What a privilege it is to have this opportunity to come and talk story with you. My topic, which is pertinent to me, is seniors in sobriety. Are we meeting the needs of our aging fellowship? Right off the bat, I'll throw you some math. I'm 68 years old. Sobriety date is April 7th of 2001. All of that on Maui. I've been on Maui for 41 years. So Hawaii area is my ho'ana, and I've done, this is number 13 PRASA for me. And PRASA to me is about bringing awareness to the fellowship about these topics, and what a great panel here, and all the panels yesterday were just fabulous, and there's no one individual in this room that can handle all that information. So this awareness ideally sparks us to find our passion so we can be of service. You know, the common ground, the theme is love and service. That's our common ground in this room. How do I find that? Within self. It's the peace of God in you that touches the peace of God in me and allows me to get vulnerable. Find some humility, then I can be of service. Otherwise, I'm self-serving. And I get in a box of my old ideas. Ideally, we're all getting older. We age with grace and dignity, right? I don't want to be one of those curmudgeons in the back of the room. So I'm going to read something off of Daily Reflections yesterday, which is really pertinent. Where does AA get its direction? These practical folk then read tradition 2 and learn that the sole authority in AA is the loving God as he may express himself in the group conscience. The elder statesman is the one who sees the wisdom of the group's decision, who holds no resentment over his reduced status, whose judgment, fortified by considerable experience, is sound, and who is willing to sit quietly on the sidelines, patiently awaiting the developments of the group conscience. So we've all been in group consciences where someone is professing they know everything. And they're letting you know with a loud voice. What that really is, that's just a loud voice. So this topic,
leads me into the first thing it asks is accessibility for the older senior alcoholic. Accessibility. So what I did when I got this topic, I reached out to members in the fellowship who are seniors, some with a lot of time, some newly sober. Right? Not everybody, just because we're old, has a lot of time. We, though, as older, we're all aging. We have issues. Some of us have health issues. Some of us have lost a partner, a spouse in our recent days. And, you know, life is lifey. I got a bunch of chicken scratches here. So in speaking with my fellowship, and Claire and I just got back from 3 weeks in the Truckee Fellowship where we're a part of, I had the opportunity to ask the question, are we meeting the needs, your needs, as a senior citizen in Alcoholics Anonymous? And they all got back to me, eventually. And they got back to me when they remembered. You know what the common thing was? I can't hear. I said, wait a minute, sit closer. But no, truly, I had a lot of people expressing, as we're getting older, we start losing our hearing, our vision, our hair, our looks. But we still have dignity and grace as sober members of Alcoholics Anonymous. The beautiful thing, though, there's been a lot of talk about, you know, the advent of online meetings. And a lot of them then got back to me and said they find it really practical to be in an online meeting. It's they don't have to drive anywhere. A lot of our meetings here in Hawaii are in the parks. It's some of those parks require a long walk. It's windy. You know, the weather's changing. And they find it uncomfortable. And me personally, my first home group was in a park. And as I got going in my sobriety, I found it really nice just to sit amongst my people and look at the clouds. It was a spiritual experience. You know, been here a long time. After a while, we've seen it all, we've heard it all, right? Becomes repetition. But the thing about being with others, it ignites and inspires me in my spiritual path. Alcoholics Anonymous, the fellowship of the spirit. That's what we're here. We are engaging with each other to inspire each other, and we're all seeking spiritual guidance. And then we take that and we go, or allows us to be of service. You know, there's so many different service positions. Bill Wilson would be thrilled if he was in this room right now with what's taken place with the general service structure and across North America, not just here. Let me look here. Oh, so I'm going to tell you a couple stories. So we do a workshop on Maui. It's a 16-week, 12-step workshop. And we get people from all... not just AA, but NA, CA, OA. It's a 12-step workshop. And in saying that, we get people of all ages, very diversified. The beautiful thing is we get questions a lot. And this gentleman named Pat, he got sober at 87 years old. And he told me he had a 45-year resentment with somebody he could never, ever get over this resentment. Right? And this was going to eat him alive. And I simply said to him, you'll find it within yourself to make an amends. And the day came where he came to me and he said, I made that amends and my life is, I feel like a teenager. And he was 88 years old at the time. My time's coming up. Boy, that goes fast. I can't buy any more time. Our responsibility pledge, the hand of AA will always be there. So I'm going to read you some very profound words. Now, if you feel that you can't go on because all your hope is gone and your life is filled with much confusion, until happiness is just an illusion and your world around is crumbling down, reach out. So if you're a senior citizen and you have issues, don't isolate. You need to reach out so the fellowship knows how we can be of help. We can't assume what you need. No one can, you know, we need to be aware and pay attention, but don't make assumptions.
Well done.
Okay, now I'm scrolling because these guys aren't using the computer to do that. So I don't know where I am. Oh, yeah. Speaking of young people, old people, in 82, I was young people chair of San Diego Spring Roundup, and then I hope to be at age 75 helping with the regional forum, right, Monte? And maybe even 29 PRASA in San Diego. Right, Roxanne? Woo! And I have no idea where I'm supposed to be, but I think... So I'll just keep talking. I'm good.
Yeah, that's why I wanted you guys to scroll through.
Hey, two.
Oh, that's 10:30. That's you've gone way too far.
We should always have real paper.
After the last presentation, I will read the following. The floor is now open for sharing on presentations. There are four microphones out there. Please line up and you will be selected one at a time. I would like to remind everyone that the 2-minute limit and 4-minute limit for those... Oh, yes, of course. Requiring interpretation, the clock starts after you introduce yourself. Please do not come to the microphone for a second time until everyone else in line has had a chance to share. Please keep your comments to the topic of this panel. We invite Spanish speakers to come to the mic. Volunteer interpreters are available. And I'm supposed to read that in Spanish, but I can't. Yes, and also please make sure you speak closely into the mic. All right, and boy, how about over there? Right here, you, yes, please, okay. Sir.
Check, hi. Tom, alcoholic. I am the lucky enough to be the Alt-DCM of the online District 25 from Area 72, Western Washington. And I've been actually going to online meetings since 1987. It's been on many, many different platforms. I can name lots of names, but it's also today even on more platforms than Zoom. It's just when the pandemic started, you guys all found out about it because you had to. But we've been doing it for a long time, and it's always been an accessibility thing with me. I'm an infrastructure guy. I'm a programmer. I wear many hats. And I really love what you all had to say about that and how we have to connect that and use every avenue possible to try to reach alcoholics, and especially the ones who can't get to physical meetings for whatever reason. Why would we ever exclude them or treat them as second-class citizens when we can all sit around listening to speaker tapes, and that's no problem, but all of a sudden, we all have phones in our pockets, but if you actually use them to go to a live meeting where everybody's equal in their own square, it's somehow not AA anymore. And it doesn't make sense to me because I've been sponsoring people since the early 90s. And online that I've met, because I've been lucky enough to travel doing something that I do artistically, and I'll meet people once or sometimes not at all. And you know what? We've never found any barriers. And I don't know where it says in the big book you have to be in the same room in order to carry the message. The message is carried when the message is carried, when one alcoholic's talking to another. And the last thing I'd like to say real quick, The long form of the third tradition says that a membership ought never depend on money or conformity. As soon as we place even one extra condition on membership, even by proxy, we're not to be cool. It's all about alcoholism. It's all about inclusion and love. And love. Thank you.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Oh, I get to go next. Yay. I'm Aaron. I'm an alcoholic. I am a GSR for an online meeting in Kyiv, Ukraine. And that is so exciting. It is so exciting. I want to say, Nick, you did a fabulous job on this topic. Thank you so much for what you brought to the table to inform all of us and help with the fellowship to be really educated on this topic. I love it. I'm very, very passionate about this online thing. It's so exciting. My first 4 years of sobriety was not in the meetings. I didn't go to meetings for the first 4 years of sobriety because I was too scared. I was terrified. I didn't understand what this fellowship thing meant. I did the steps. I did the, you know, I did the program in my life, the way we're supposed to practice it. You know, practice all of our affairs. At no time did the steps tell me to go to a meeting. But it wasn't until I started going to my spiritual awakening home group that's based out of Kyiv, Ukraine, did my life start to change for real. I've dove into being of service, I've dove into being in in-person meetings and all of these things, but it didn't open up my eyes and the amount of vulnerability that I can be with others when we got to have people from around the world. We were just talking about last night, because the meeting was last night at 10 o'clock. And Michael, who's our secretary, who's in Kyiv, even commented on how we have somebody from Japan, we had somebody from Australia, we have somebody from the UK, from around the world. He's like, we truly are from around the world. And it makes my heart flutter thinking about it and how beautiful this fellowship is and how much we get to have our common singleness of purpose and that we're there for each other and to be sober together no matter where we're at. And we get to be examples of this, and we are currently being able to move that into the future, right? Especially with the topic about the young people. That's where they're at, right? They're online. They can understand that, and they can be a part of it, and that's where we need to be as well, and I love that. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I didn't bring my binoculars, but okay, back there.
Hello? Okay. Good morning, everyone. My name's Christine. I am an alcoholic. I'm from Area 07. I am the appointed accessibility chair, and I'm super excited. I got up at 6 in the morning to come make this panel this morning because it's definitely, I related with just about almost every single one of them on a personal level and on a service level. I just want to say about the young people's that in California, WIPA is alive and well at our table. I want to say that our delegate started out at Saki. Our chair started out at Saki Pa, I think, if I'm getting the story correct. Saki, Saki, Saki.
Pa, Pa, Pa.
And we have DCMs that are from various various WIPA conferences. I myself, I was old, 45 when I got sober. And that's old in WIPA standards. And at 46 or so, I was sitting on ACIPA host committee. I don't remember the Roman numerals because I'm almost a senior now, but it was 2014. And I sat as, sorry if I'm talking loud, I'm nervous, the GSR liaison. And that is how I got my start into where I am today. And I am ever so grateful for that WIPA made room at the table for me as an older person. I was encouraged to stand for a position and to come to the elections and be part of the host committee. So I'm super grateful for that. And then later on, I served on ICIPA 62 in San Francisco, and that started my general service tour again. So I traded in WIPA conferences for general service assemblies and being involved with the area. So I'm super grateful for that. And come to California, we're alive and well over there. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, I'm supposed to remind us that we are going to end in about 12 minutes, and we're only going to be able to hear about from the next person at each microphone. So, all right.
My name is Tom. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Tom.
I had the privilege of serving as delegate panel 70 for the California Northern Interior Area 7. I want to thank the panel and another great round of panelists. And Nick in particular touched upon some things that I found really close to my heart is these online meetings. You know, this whole COVID thing put us into a new situation. And when we needed it, we found a way to meet. And then everybody got back together, and all of a sudden these online meetings were the outcasts, you know. And in my home group, we have online meetings. We don't do it hybrid because we don't have the Wi-Fi. But I attend those meetings, and I've met and sponsored men who have never been to an online or an in-person meeting, you know. But there are people that got sober and did eventually get into the rooms. And I think it's important that we keep those doors open. If these online meetings were available when I first got sober, I would have been the guy, black screen, somebody else's name, half awake, just listening, not sharing, to hear what it was like. That would have been my step through that door, because walking through the door was too much. It took me several attempts to get to the door, waiting outside, looking. But I could have got in and looked, but what would I have heard? You know, we can say that the online meetings are not AA. What are we bringing to those meetings so that alcoholic with the black screen can associate? We need to be a part of that. We need to be a part of that, the solution for that person who's there for the very first time, and get them into the doors. Maybe they'll come to an online meeting. Maybe they'll just, you know, walk into a door one day or whatever it is, but we need to encourage that participation for those that need to get to that meeting in some fashion, and hopefully it's an online if that works for them. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hello, I'm Joe. I'm an alcoholic. And I'm from Eureka, California. Thanks, everyone, for all your presentations. I was 6 years sober before I'd come out as gay, and I was back in Ireland for about 8 months, and I was really nervous that I was going to drink unless I came out. Otherwise, you know, I knew I would die. And when I came out, mostly everyone was supportive, but one person said, oh, I wouldn't brush the floor with you, like, you know, you're a rag or something. And I guess the message I have is we have to be really, really careful. We have a lot of ideas and opinions, most of it based on fear. We have to be careful what we say. It impacts people tremendously, and we could result in people dying. So pay attention. Thanks.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is McKenna, and I'm an alcoholic. I have a sobriety date of August 14th of 2020. I am the Area 9 District 18 Secretary. My home group is the Wild Bunch of Irvine. We have 5 meetings throughout Orange County because we have gotten kicked out of multiple churches in Irvine. And so as I'm sure you can tell, I'm like very passionate about young people. I got sober at 20. I'll qualify for a second. I got sober at 22. We have about 100 members of our home group, 60 plus that are under the age of 28, you know. And most of whom are under the age of 25. Multiple of my sponsees, men and women, are also under the age of 25. And I've heard a lot of really awesome things tonight on this panel. And another thing, we also have multiple members of our home group who are queer, LGBTQ, non-binary, and trans. And so we have a very, like, present. Like, I feel what is happening in society as a whole, we are seeing really active in our home group. And I've heard some really awesome things tonight on this panel. Thank you guys for all of your ideas. And then also for the panel yesterday on CPC and PI. I think I learned some awesome things about that as well. But I've heard a lot today and yesterday. Do people know where to find AA with professionals and with young people? And I do think there's stuff that we can do maybe in CPC, but I would like to offer maybe an alternative perspective that can sit equally with increased CPC efforts. With the access to the internet, do people know where to find AA? I think the answer is yes. But I do believe that some people are not liking what they've found. There's a lot of access to the internet with like what's been going on, and I think that over the last few years. And so I have some questions which might be a little uncomfortable, but which I've heard from some of my young people.
Thank you very much. Sorry, people, we're out of time. Let me do some announcements real quick.
Aloha. I'm sorry, we got to keep things on schedule. Remember, on Sunday, there's a What's on Your Mind, and we would love to hear from all of you. Anyway, you probably know me by now. My name's Bob. I am an alcoholic. We have a lot of announcements, and I'm hoping to get a gentleman up here to help me. Area 9, your photo will be at 10:45 a.m. Meet at the message board, and I hope that this goes up on the message board as well.
Sí, buenas tardes. En el área 09 va a tener su fotografía a las 10:45. Les van a mandar mensaje para que se reúnan.
Area 69 will do their photo today at 12:20 p.m. outside in front of the Hilton sign with the statues on the grass.
La área 69 va a tomar su fotografía a las 12:20 afuera de enfrente del hotel.
Area 6, Prasa picture on the stairs outside the Palace Lounge. They didn't put a time, so I don't know when that is. Put it up on the bulletin board too.
La área 06 a las 12:25 va a tomar su fotografía abajo de las escaleras.
Area 42 will take place today at 4:15 at the Aloha sign on the first floor outside the elevators.
La área 42 va a tomar su fotografía a las 4:15 en el anuncio de la Aloha sign enfrente del edificio.
Area 72, Western Washington, photo Saturday, 10:40 a.m., stairs by the escalators.
La área 72 va a tomar su fotografía a las 10:45 abajo de las escaleras.
Arizona picture, 6:45 p.m. Saturday by the Aloha sign outside the Tapa building. This is the Tapa building, by the way.
La Arizona va a tomar su fotografía a las 6:45 en el anuncio de Aloha abajo del edificio al lado de la barra.
I'm not sure if these are dated because some of them have been up here from yesterday. Area 93 photo, it says, will be when? Today or tomorrow? Okay, because it says tomorrow on this, but it's today at the Aloha sign by the lobby.
La área 93 va a tomar su fotografía ahora a las 10:45 en el anuncio de Aloha Sign que está abajo al lado de la barra.
Area 58, I think Chris is out there somewhere. 220, is that today or yes? 220 at the Aloha sign.
La área 58 vas a tomar su fotografía a las 12:30 de la tarde abajo en el anuncio de la Aloha sign al lado de la barra.
Maybe. I don't know what I have. Area 02, picture, Saturday. That's today. 4:15 at the Aloha sign.
La área 2 va a tomar su fotografía ahora a las 4:15 en el anuncio de Aloha.
California Northern Interior, Area 7 photo, 12:25 at the Aloha sign. Is that today? Yes, okay. It doesn't say. If you're going to do these, please put the day on them so that, because they stay up here.
La Área 07, que es mi área, va a tomar su fotografía a las 12:25 p.m. en el anuncio de Aloha al lado de la barra.
Area 5 will be taking their photo Saturday at 12:15. We will meet in the hallway outside this room. It's right out there.
La área 5 va a tomar su fotografía a las 12:15 aquí afuera de del edificio.
Aloha kakou, Hawaii Area 17, aloha. We're moving the group photo time to 9:15, which is now, so right after this, in the foyer. We want to be sure that our delegate is present for this special moment, et cetera, et cetera. What about the...
Yeah, I have this one here. This is, we're doing that one now. I wanted to do all of those first because this is the...